You're listening to the Listen Up Show, Startup Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm Mitchell Chadrow, your host. Today on show 046, we interview Meredith Rubin. What will we focus on today? Well, we're going to talk to Meredith about her entrepreneurial experiences and her life lessons as a woman business owner in an industry traditionally dominated by men. She will serve our audience well, so let's listen to her advice, the resources that she provides to us, and the wisdom that she'll provide. Listen up, trusted friends. It's your business, it's your family, it's your life. Now let's get started. Please sign up to my email list for the latest special offers exclusive for our Listen Up Show Startup Entrepreneur Podcast audience at mitchellchadrow.com/signup. I have been providing business advice, resources, and help to entrepreneurs for over 20 years, and I'm looking forward to helping all of you. Sign up for my email list again at mitchellchadrow.com/signup. I will provide you with full transcript for each interview, my ebook, 30 Tools to Startup, the Startup Checklist, and many other education and training materials, all back at mitchellchadrow.com/signup. Now enjoy the show. Meredith is the CEO of EBP Supply, a third-generation family business in a tough industry for anyone. You probably remember Nancy May on our show 044. Nancy actually recommended that we interview Meredith. Nancy tells us that Meredith is not only talented, she's thoughtful, she's engaging, and has been successfully leading her firm for a very long time. Meredith is a leader that many of the men and women in the region look up to and respect. Meredith Rubin was a lawyer in her late 20s, but soon left that career to lead the family business. Back then, EBP Supply Solutions was known as Eastern Bag and Paper. So why walk away from a career in law, some would ask? Well, first let's ask her about the business. So how you doing today, Meredith?
Wonderful, and thanks for that very nice introduction. I'm honored to
be this is great. You know, I'm so excited. When I read about you and your background, I was so excited because, like Nancy May had said, I knew that the audience was really in for a real treat. Can you tell us a little bit about EBP Supply Solutions and what the company actually does?
Of course. We're a wholesale distributor of janitorial supplies and solutions and services, and we are a regional distributor, and we span from New England through the Mid-Atlantic.
How have you been able to take EBP Supply from just a local distributorship servicing a small area in Connecticut to actually a regional supply solutions enterprise?
Well, I think, you know, there's several factors in our success, and I've been thinking about it over the years. And I think the biggest lever was my parents' philosophy of hiring the best people that they could afford in the organization, particularly in management, and delegating authority to them and really bringing in new expertise whenever they could. And I think that's allowed us to grow and to, you know, embrace new ideas over the years. And, you know, I really think having acquired several businesses over the years, some entrepreneurs try to keep the decision making and, you know, most of the revenue in their pocket, so to speak. But I think relying on other people has really been a key to our success.
But what would you say is the number one thing that contributes most to your success to date?
Well, I think, you know, it's such a fast moving environment, and being flexible and open to ideas. And also, you know, I've thought about the history of our company, and really it seems like every 3 or 4 years we almost have to reinvent ourselves and redefine ourselves. More recently, we've said to ourselves, we can't only be a supplier of goods. We have to provide services. We have to shift into really being a supplier of services. In one way, defining for our customers what selection that they should have, so being a consultant, and also just looking at the array of what we do and adding services wherever we can so we can be more meaningful to our customers. Our mantra is expert thinking, top brands, service and services. So we're really trying to redefine our direction now. And, you know, our start was as a food service company, and well into our history, we decided to add to that offering and go into more of the janitorial supplies. And that's really been, you know, we were able say, in the 70s and the 80s to expand to be so much more meaningful to our customers. So over the years, we've really had to look at what we're doing and to redefine, you know, our mission, so to speak.
Our startup round. For all your hosting needs, head on over to MitchellChadro.com/hosting. MitchellChadro.com/hosting for all your web hosting needs.
Who do you use to host this website?
So, you know, our audience comprises of obviously not only startups and business owners, but people who are professionals in their career who are looking to obviously start something up on the side. So given all of your experiences from decade after decade, and given the fact that you've really had to be nimble and continue to sort of pivot and change over these last several decades, what would you suggest to them in terms of the mindset of an entrepreneur?
Well, I think someone once said to me that I have to spend more time thinking and less time doing. And I think for entrepreneurs, you know, we all want to be action-oriented and, you know, do. But I think being very thoughtful about what is your differentiation and having a strategic plan, even you could be the smallest of business people, but really having a focused plan on what you want to do and what you don't want to do and where you want to expend your resources and what you don't want to expend your resources on, and being disciplined about that, I think is a very, very key to the success of every business, no matter what size that you are. Thinking about who is your true customer and what is the unique value that you're going to bring to that customer. And again, being very disciplined about what you're going to do and what you're not going to do, I think is very, very important to the success of any business.
You know, it's very wise, and I hope a lot of people in the audience really listen up to that advice, because it's very, very true in whatever industry or whatever product or solution that the audience also wants to sort of bring to market. You know, I was very interested in reading that you're the third generation for this business, and I read some information about your dad, who was the second generation, and of course your dad was Gerald Baum, and he was actually very worried about business succession for the future of the business. So he was sure to speak with you about this issue. Can you talk to us about what he actually taught you about business succession planning and how you actually apply it to your own family in this maybe new fourth generation down the road?
Yes. Well, I think I want to give credence and kudos to my mother as well, because she became president after my dad passed away. You know, my father had a relatively small business when I came into it, a very good business, but he was always a forward thinker. So it was not only on a personal level in terms, he had three beautiful daughters, me included in there.
That's right. You can boast a little bit. You know, you're entitled to sort of say, you know, these are some of my accomplishments.
And so, you know, he was very concerned about what the next, who was going to take over the business, and was thinking about that. But he was also concerned about the market in general, and could an independent succeed? And that was, in the late 60s, early 70s. And, the factor of being an independent even then, concerned him and caused him to be one of the founders of Network Distribution, which is a group of distributors globally that buy together and sell together, and we're able to not violate the antitrust laws, but by collectively establishing a price for a customer and selling through network distribution, contract with global as well as national customers, as customers, and also to leverage our collective buying power. So that has enabled EBP over the years to compete with national and global distribution companies that are wholly owned, And I think that if Network had not been formed and my father had not been the first president and had not been so fundamental and concerned about this, that probably, Eastern Bag or EBP would not be surviving today. And he did, on a personal level, talk with my sisters and I. One of my sisters is an architect and the other one, was a newspaper executive and now another executive. But that was, concerning to him. And I just had a love for the business. And while I love the law, as he continued to think about it, that caused me to want to join the company.
You mentioned the network. And today, all of the young entrepreneurs that are starting businesses are told that sales is extremely vital. And it is. It's extremely important. So in listening to the story of how your dad actually created the network and maybe talking to us a little bit more about how he was able to sort of build up that network and how you then were able to then take it to the next level to sort of continue to bring additional revenue channels into the company. I think it would be instructive to the people listening in terms of some of the things that they must do in their own businesses to sort of generate those sales and those creative relationships that are important.
Sure. I want to say that he was amongst a group of New England distributors that were the founders of Network. He was one of several. He was the first president and devoted a lot of his energies to Network. And actually, I did see it as the future, a very important part of our future, and devoted many years working on committees and was actually chair of the board for a couple of years. Encourage all my executives to participate in Network initiatives. So we're still very much involved in Network. And I think for entrepreneurs, looking at alliances, looking at ways to learn, we had our former president taught me to really open my mind, and sometimes someone who you would view as, I don't want to say your enemy, but someone who, you would view skeptically, you need to open your mind and say, how can you work with them? How can they help you? It's a very connected world, and you have to have an open mind as to how you can work through or with people that may be unlikely partners to you, but that can get you to where you need to go in the market. I know that's general. I know that sounds general, but it's sort of an adage that I learned from Jim Sugarman, who was our president and then later one of our chairs.
I think that's very wise, because not a lot of people would think to look at somebody who might be, like you said, viewed upon as maybe either being different from them or maybe, like you put it, their enemy, but yet there's where opportunities may lie, and it's an interesting mind shift. I wasn't going to let this interview go without, of course, mentioning your mom, Louise, as the next president for the company, and that kind of takes me into my next question, and that is, shortly after you had started the company, Dad had passed away 4 years later, and if you could tell us what you were personally going through at that point, facing the big decision as to, what to do next, and I know, Mom took over the company, but I think people would really like to hear that story, because it was one of not only perseverance and maybe a little bit of struggle at the time, maybe that's how you've been able to get to where you are today.
Sure, yeah. No, I'm glad that you reminded me that I said that, because she was faced with her death and actually, had a protracted illness. And she was very wise in that and kind, because I had worked in the business by that time for 7 years. And she gave me the choice to inherit the company with some debt, to pay off the IRS, or to inherit the company sharing with my sisters and other liquid assets. And I think that's important because, I think my sisters are very, smart people. But I think that many family members are faced with non-participants, and that, I took some risks and I bought some companies, and, it can lead to a lot of family strife, when you have silent partners, and I chose to inherit the company with some debt at the time, which I've paid off. But I you know, really have maintained a wonderful, wonderful relationship with my sisters, who I love so much, and they've sustained me, you know, through the years, because my mom died when I was 40 and my dad died when I was 32. So,
yeah, wow.
You know, my sisters and my husband are really, you know, so important to me. So, it was important on a business way, and it was important on a relationship way that, you know, I was able to, you know, separate business and family.
It's interesting. I read here that back in 1979 it was that your dad actually began talking to you about you becoming successor to the future of the business. And even back then, you also had mentioned Jim Sugarman, who's been with the company and became president. In terms of getting involved on the team in an industry that probably doubted that women could actually succeed in leadership. And so maybe talk to us about some of the other struggles. I mean, it was hard enough, of course, when your dad had passed away and then mom took over and she had passed away. But talk to us a little bit about those other struggles, because now you're taking over the reins and yet it's still being doubtful whether or not you could be a leader in this company.
Oh, absolutely. It was really an anomaly in 1979 in our industry for a father to pass along the business to their daughter or their wife. And my mother was a very smart woman, a very brilliant and a very wise woman. And a funny story, a delegate of businessmen, my father was very popular in the industry, asked to see my mother. And we went to a eating club in Bridgeport, which, by the way, did not allow women in the main dining room.
Wow.
Them only in the side, very airless room.
And what year was that?
It was 1983.
Oh, my gosh.
And so we got special dispensation to dine in the main dining room. They said to my mother that, you know, Eastern Bag was my father's main asset and that I had a different personality than my father because I'm kind of bookish. And
okay.
They really doubted that this was going to fly and that they were there to, you know, advise my mother, and I was sitting right there, that she should sell the business. And my mother, you know, as I said, was from Boston and very much of a lady, and she thanked them for making the trip from far and wide, because they did come from, you know, all over the United States. And she thanked them and she said, you know, Meredith and I are committed to carrying on the company, and, you know, I appreciate your interest and your love for Jerry, but this is what I did. And that was just one of many challenges that was one. But, you know, I do say that there are times, and, you know, there are people today, that young women, that may dispute this, but there were times when customers did not want to deal with a woman leader, or even, say, a vendor, or even like a service, a bank. Not my current bank, they're great, but there were certain bankers. And I always kind of had the philosophy, my father used to say tunnel vision, you know, understand what your goal is and understand what is the best way to get to that goal. And, you know, if someone would rather deal with Jim Sugarman and he's more efficacious to speak in the meeting and get what's gotten to be done, then all right, let him, you know, that's the way to get to your goal. So I tried to sort of be very focused on the goal and, you know, not take things that much to heart in terms of, you know, what I found out there. And there weren't that many circumstances of, quote, discrimination, but, you know, there were some times when people just didn't want to deal with, you know, a lady leader, and I had to get to the goalpost the best way that I could.
And so that was one of the ways that you were creatively able to sort of rise above, if you will, that type of discrimination. But I had also read that you had made some, I guess, acquisitions, which kind of helped put any issues to rest in terms of those rumors, to actually strengthen the position. And that's how you were then able to start to begin to service the entire state of Connecticut.
Yes.
And so through the network, through sort of making these acquisitions, what else have you been able to do over these decades to basically continue to leverage off of what dad and mom and first generation kind of set forth to kind of continue to make sure that you're continually reinventing yourselves and growing?
Sure. I want to go back to, you know, our acquisitions. You know, there were rumors, you know, as I was having children and that we were going to sell the company. And so my mother and I decided that we wanted to expand and we wanted to show the industry that we were in business to do business. So we did acquire a business in Hartford, Connecticut, and that enabled us to be more of a Connecticut company. And then after my mother died, just after I had given birth to my third child, some of our customers, there were rumors that I had three kids and, you know, all this. And also our customers were wanting us to be more of a New England company. So Jim Sugarman and I decided to buy Salem Paper up in Massachusetts. Some of the rumors, you know, spurred me on, shall we say, some of my customers. So that impacted, you know, us.
We continue to talk about the various challenges that you're faced with. It's just a matter of how you were able to sort of overcome that. And then not only that, but then continue to expand and leverage. So not only from the network and then make the acquisition and sort of be able to then service the entire state of Connecticut, but how are you able to then sort of continue to build on the successes of your dad and your mom and sort of take it to the next level and continue to be nimble and reinvent yourself?
I think a really good example, first of all, I want to give kudos to Jim Sugarman, to the leadership that we had in the company. They were always bringing new ideas, and you know, I couldn't have ever run the company without having a very, very strong executive team. Our CFO, you know, is second to none. You know, I can go through our whole ranks. So we really have our current president, Eric Peabody, you know, came from a much larger company. And I do want to mention we have a fourth generation, my son Andrew Rubin, who's our VP of marketing, who brings so much innovation to the company.
How is it? I mean, it really comes full circle, because one of the questions I did have in terms of succession planning for this next generation, and before I got into that, basically going to say that another challenge is balancing it all. And obviously, in the beginning, when you took over the company, growing a business, growing a family is obviously very challenging, and be able to balance those types of demands, not only from a business perspective, but you're raising, at that point, young kids, building a household. Talk to us a little bit about that, because I know that there's a lot of people out there right now who are struggling with that. And then it comes full circle, because here he is now, the fourth generation, working in the business.
Yes. Well, I can say that as to the balancing, I have a wonderful husband. You know, he has a wonderful career in his own right. He's a managing partner of a law firm. But he always supported me and, you know, just was a great partner in supporting me in all the things that I wanted to do. And it's about building the team that you have at home, if you can afford it. It's about really thinking about what your priorities are. You know, yes, there was a lot of tension between, you know, should I be at home? Should I be at work?
Sure.
You know, it's not easy, but I think that, you know, every year I would really sit down and say, you know, of course my priorities are my children, my family, you know, my husband, my business, but really thinking about the year and once you crystallize what's coming ahead of you and how you want to prioritize that and what you have to delegate, and creating kind of a team at home and a team at work, really being clear about what your priorities are. It makes it easier, but I can say there were moments, you know, where I felt guilt. You know, I, you know, tried to balance it all. I always wanted to drive my kids to school, and I always wanted to be home for dinner. And, you know, in the years that my kids were growing up, I wanted to be home at night to do their homework. And I had a wonderful nanny for about 19 years that was really, you know, someone who supported me in every way, as well as a wonderful husband. So not everyone can have a nanny, but
sure.
It's about building the best support team you can around you. And don't be afraid to delegate the stuff that's not important.
And that's why we talk about resources. So if resources could be people, could be the people that you surround yourself with, like having, like you said, a supportive spouse, or in your case, a nanny. It's being creative and making sure to do that. And it sounds like you were able to do both, which I think is really an inspiration to many.
Thank you. Yeah. And, you know, we talked a little bit about innovation, and I think it's very important for people to develop a strategic plan, to really spend a lot of time thinking about your customer and how you're going to be differentiate yourself to your customer. Who really is your customer, and how are you going to add unique value to that customer, and developing some very specific initiatives, and then, you know, meeting quarterly, which is what we do, to go over, are we doing everything that we said, you know, when we developed our 2017 action step, and then refreshing that plan and, you know, very, very deeply every 3 years to make sure that you're on the right path. And do you have to reinvent yourself again, you know, or come up with something that's really going to be responsive to a very changing environment?
Take the audience in a little bit, because people are more curious about this, because as they're starting to think about their own startup, as they're starting to think about how they're taking their own business to the next level, it's helpful for them to hear about the way in which your company itself is put together. So let's dive a little bit deeper. Tell people, for example, how many locations you're in, types of clients, and the number of customers. Take us a little bit more in depth in terms of the actual company itself.
Sure. We have three locations, about 160,000 square feet each. One near Boston, one near New Haven, Connecticut, and one in Cranberry, New Jersey. And from there, and we have a cross dock in upstate New York. So we service New England and the Mid-Atlantic. Our end-use customers are, we have a VP of healthcare where we service acute care and long-term care, hospitals and nursing homes. And then we have a redistribution business, a VP of redistribution sales. We service other distributors. And then in each one of our locations, our three locations, we have a VP of sales where we service customers that are institutions or fairly large food service establishments like caterers or processors or, you know, multi-unit food service.
This is a regional company. This is a large company. Give the audience some idea in terms of the numbers, in terms of how many employees you actually have, and generally speaking, the number of clients or the customers, just to kind of give them, you know, an idea. And I appreciate the fact that it's a private company, but, you know, whatever you're comfortable in talking about, just so that people can sort of wrap their minds around just how modest you're being.
Well, we have 300 employees, and, you know, we have around 3,000 customers. Any one facility, for example, we ship about 25,000 cases a night, and hopefully receive 22,000 cases in the morning, but no. So, you know, we're shipping thousands of cases. For example, out of Milford, we'll ship 14,000, 15,000 cases a night. So it's complicated. We embarked on a program. One of our VPs, our VP of operations, came from a very large food service company a while back. And he brought to us the whole discipline of Six Sigma Lean, and we embarked on an initiative of a commitment to excellence in which we wanted to achieve the perfect order. So we, you know, developed 10 parameters, you know, 100% fulfillment, clean cases, on-time delivery, et cetera, et cetera. And we came up with a world-class goal is 85% of your orders go out absolutely perfect based on the 10 parameters. And we achieved that about 4 or 5 years ago where, on, you know, most nights, 85% of our cases go out perfectly. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, our order fill is around 98.8% today. So it doesn't mean that we have an 85% order fill. It means that we have all these parameters and that we send out these perfect orders. We also have a process where every month we go over actually every error made in the company, whether it be pricing, whether it be picking. You know, we have about 40 operational errors and we group them into departments under, you know, managers, and we actually meet top down and go over trending, and we have goals, Sigma goals, where we're, you know, if we're below that certain Sigma goal, then we dive a little deeper and look at, you know, is it an individual, a process, and we, you know, we'll re-engineer a process in order to get to our goal. So we're constantly seeking operational excellence, and this was brought to us by someone who, you know, one of our leaders who worked at a very large outside company that brought to us this sort of improvement.
That's great. In terms of quality assurance, there's a lot of people in various different industries out there listening who have different types of products and solutions who are also looking for different resources in terms of how to improve upon not only their customer service on the front end, but on the back end in terms of the quality assurance. So I think all of those things are critical in making sure that customers are serviced properly throughout the entire life cycle of the product or solution.
Sometimes you have to really be creative to get resources to help you improve your company. And when we embarked on the Six Sigma Lean project, it was really, as we looked around the state, there were very few resources for people to come and help train our people to be green belts, black belts, because it was mostly available in manufacturing. and really not in services. So we went to Central Connecticut State College, where they had kind of a state, an alliance with the state of Connecticut to help businesses improve. And we actually asked them to innovate for services. It was Central Connecticut State College, you know, associated with UConn. And they had an alliance with another group to bring Six Sigma Lean quality to manufacturing. And we asked this entity to innovate and to develop a program for services. So I guess the point of it is, if you want to do something, you kind of have to dig sometime to bring that to your industry or your niche and help, you know, other consultants or resources to be creative and bring that knowledge to your company. And I just wanted to add that to our...
That's terrific. The show notes are actually going to be back at mitchellchadwick.com/show046. So I'm actually going to have a link to everything that we've discussed today in the show, as well as the college in terms of Six Sigma, and so that people in the audience could actually look into that as well. So I think that that's really superb.
Top distribution is a very low margin business, not like manufacturers. You know, there's not a lot of room for error. You really have to eliminate error from your process. Otherwise, you know, whether it be repricing, redelivering, delivering a partial order, it's when you're a regional distributor and competing for national accounts or even very large regional accounts, you really have to fight for every dollar and every penny.
Where do you take the company from here in terms of next step, next things that you're looking to do, and maybe some food for thought for others out in the audience in terms of how to maybe even take their startups that have been in existence for several years to the next level?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of consolidation happening in our industry, and we are looking at acquisitions, but again, we want to be very focused on growing according to our strategic plan about what kind of industry, what kind of product lines, where geographically we want to grow. You know, acquiring other distributors that are in line with our strategic plan is number one, but also investing more in services and more in, you know, for example, we sell floor machines, and we sell preventative maintenance service and repair service. So that's just one service that we're looking at.
What other solutions or services are you looking to either A, add, or B, grow percentage-wise in your overall mix of products and solutions?
Sure. Let me just go back to the machines. We're looking to look at different leasing capabilities construct so that it makes it easier for people to acquire the machines or, you know, acquire the machines and other products in the same bundle. So we're looking at different, say, financial constructs to help our customers. We're looking to expand our warewash and laundry services, which is chemical dispensing, you know, machines and chemicals in laundry and warewash and laundry. So, you know, anything that is where we're adding value and we're providing intimate service to our customers and helping them have a clean, you know, environment is one area that we're looking at very, very closely.
Our fast pitch, mitchellchadwick.com/books for books, audiobooks, guest recommendations, and the books that I read to start up each day. Sponsors are Fast Pitch, my book club recommendations back at mitchellchadwick.com/books. To see more of my recommendations and recommendations of our guests, just go to mitchellchadwick.com/books. It's your number one resource for book reviews and recommendations. Can you tell us a book, whether it be in business or family or life, that has really meant a lot to you that you can recommend to the audience?
Yes. Jim Collins' book, I think, is...
Good to Great.
Good to Great is a great book. Connected is a wonderful book that I read.
Tell you what, I'm going to look it up afterwards. I'll definitely link to that. As far as productivity goes, whether it be a productivity app or some type of a resource that you use in your own life to sort of help you, can you recommend something to the audience? As far as a mantra or a quote or something to sort of live by, a saying, a little saying, can you tell us something?
Focal vision was something that my father used to say that I live by.
There's nothing better than a little saying from what your dad would say to you. I mean, my nanny used to have all kinds of little sayings, and there's not a day that doesn't go by that
there's
I don't
so
think
many
of
things,
the thing.
EVP, but I guess because I'm on a podcast, I can't remember them.
Well, you know, it's that way with everything. You know what I mean? You're standing in front of a group of 500 people, and you know you're quick on your feet. I mean, you remember those good old days being in the courtroom, right? You know, where the judge asks you something and, you know, you're like, oh, why didn't I say that when I was in court? Right?
Yes.
But we always remember, we always hear that voice of, whether it be Gerald saying that in the back of your mind or my nanny saying something to me in the back of my mind. And so sometimes
I'll tell you this. One poem that that sustains me and it sits on my desk is the poem, If You Can Keep Your Head When All About You Are Blaming, that by Rudyard Kipling, because it really, you know, talks about being calm and knowing yourself and being confident and being able to, you know, speak to people at all levels in an open-hearted way. So I keep that poem on my desk. So
That's great. That's terrific. And that's really what these questions are all about, because people remember that when you're looking for that extra boost. Sometimes people like to sort of go back to that. Our wrap-up round, MitchellChadrow.com/photos. For all your graphic design needs. In this wrap-up round, we like to ask our guests three main takeaways that they like to leave the audience with. So if you could do that, I think that would be very helpful.
If I look back on my career, that perseverance and courage are probably key to being an entrepreneur.
And how about three? Because you already gave us two.
I think empathy is the third.
Very good. I like it.
Well, you know, empathy in particular in these day and age, because, you know, you can learn from everybody and you can understand from everybody, and you really have to keep an open and learning mind to be successful in today's world.
And, you know, how's everybody going to stay in contact with you?
Well, they can email me, or I'm on LinkedIn, and my email is mruben, R-E-U-B-E-N, at ebpsupply.com. And I want to have the ability to send you this book that I'm trying to remember. By the way, I read two or three books a week, literally. I'm a very big reader, so I'm really mad at myself for not.
Well, you know, it's interesting because all the books that our guests recommend and that I recommend could always be found back at MitchellChadrow.com/books.
Wonderful. There's one book that I can see it and I just can't remember. That's why I was a little stumped. I'm going to include that.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, you're going to send that to me afterwards and I will absolutely include it in the notes and certainly a link to it as well, because those are awesome resources as well.
Yeah.
If there's anything in closing that you forgot to mention, you can mention it now.
Well, I guess I learned a lot by being on boards. And by, you know, I think giving back into your community is a wonderful way for you to see how bigger companies operate, how they think, and that has been very instrumental, you know, in my development is being on various boards and learning from, you know, how do people think about problems and how do they solve problems, and it brought a lot of good processes and thinking into my company. So I encourage everyone to give to their community as well.
Well, I'll tell you what, Meredith, I am so thrilled that Nancy May suggested that I reach out to you to do the interview, because I have thoroughly enjoyed it, and I know that our audience is going to get a tremendous amount of wisdom out of it. So I want to thank you very much for all of your leadership and everything that you do to inspire not only everyone and women in particular, and want to thank you for that very much. Please keep in contact and let us know how you're continue to grow and thrive. And I'd be curious to find out how your son is doing in the business as well. And that fourth generation is very exciting. Hopefully we hear from you real soon.
Thanks so much, Mitch.
You take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In closing, let me ask for my listeners' help. First, please subscribe to my email list at MitchellChadrow.com/signup. You will get all the full interview transcripts, my ebook, 30 Tools to Start Up, where I talk about these free resources in show 006. You'll get the startup checklist, education and training materials, and other resources just by signing up at MitchellChadrow.com/signup.
Listen up, trusted friends. It's your business. It's your family. It's your life. Go out and live it.
back at MitchellChadro.com/signup, help me boost the rankings of the Listen Up Show, the Startup Entrepreneur Podcast, by providing a well-written review in iTunes. MitchellChadro.com/iTunes. It helps other people find the show. If you actually need instructions on how to do this, you can find that back at MitchellChadro.com/signup. Thank you so much for subscribing to my email list and providing a written review on iTunes. Until next time.